G'day again. My name is John Caruso. Welcome to our podcast, Everyone Has a Story. It's the podcast that complements our two quarterly lifestyle magazines, Hello Sunshine and In Noosa Magazine. The autumn issue's about to hit the streets. Very exciting. If you would like your brand or your business to be part of our next issue, our winter issues of Hello Sunshine and In Noosa Magazine, please reach out to our client service managers. We're on Facebook and Instagram. Okay, on with today's episode. Today's guest has travelled and worked for some of the best and biggest hospitality brands around. His passion for food was sparked early on when his family moved to Hong Kong and Singapore because of his father's work. Following stints in Melbourne and making a name for himself at Ricky's in Noosa, my next guest has now branched out into the ready-made meals business with a brand new brand, Noosa Cartel. Everyone has a story, and today I'd like you to meet Josh Smallwood.
Are you Melburnian? Did you grow up in Melbourne?
No, I moved to Melbourne when I was 20, when I first became a chef. I think I was 21 when I was 20. So I grew up in Brisbane. Born in Sydney, grew up in Brisbane.
Right.
Did all my schooling there. I lived a little bit overseas as well. My dad got a job in Hong Kong and Singapore we lived in. He used to work for Pizza Hut and then came back to Brisbane when I was maybe 14 or 15, and then, moved to Melbourne when I was 21, as soon as I started chefing.
When was that time in Hong Kong?
I was 11, so what's that, almost 30 years ago now.
Okay, was it back
95,
to the Chinese or the year? Oh.
Just before it went back to the Chinese, I think.
Yeah, right.
So I think we were there 91 to 92, about a year and a half, and then Singapore, 93, 94.
What was that like, living there?
Awesome. Opened my eyes up to the world.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go, because I didn't want to leave my friends, but invaluable experience with culture and food and travel, and that really probably brought my love for food, was actually moving to Hong Kong and trying things like yum cha and Peking duck and, the street food they have there. That was amazing.
I'm imagining that your dad, with Pizza Hut, was an executive at some level.
Yeah, so like a franchise manager.
Not really a chef or anything. So
no.
Who and where was it? Your mom, or was it? Where did your love or passion for working in the kitchen and creating in the kitchen come from?
Well, when I was really young, I didn't like much at all.
Yeah.
I liked sweets and cereal.
Yeah.
But probably around that time we moved, I just started to, I guess my palate developed, and my mum and dad always liked cooking. My dad really liked cooking different things and trying different things at home. And when we moved there, everyone in the family, I guess, became a lot more involved in food, Asian ingredients, and back then they weren't, too readily available at the supermarket. So we just, I think we just started playing, and then always loved my dad and my family, loved going out for dinner for any events, but trying different restaurants and trying different food. My mum loves trying different stuff. So I think it probably branched from living in overseas.
Yeah.
And then being young and not knowing what I wanted to do, I just sort of fell into the kitchen as a kitchen hand.
Yeah.
Just to get a job. And then just loved the environment, and then I've always loved food. I've always loved tasting it and tasting new things. So then it just became natural to just go in there and give it a shot.
Tell me about your experiences in Melbourne. I too, a Queensland boy, but ended up living and working in Melbourne for 7 years. And the thing that struck me was that food culture.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I know you're talking about the fact that you've been to Hong Kong, which again must be on another level.
Yeah.
But in Melbourne, the diversity and the other influences, like the European influences of food and culture. Tell me about your time there and where you worked. I know you worked at Guy Grossi's in Bourke Street.
Was that for like? Sure. I started my apprenticeship in Brisbane, but I had a mate who was a chef, and we were just into food. Like, we're starting to go, this is really it. And Brisbane's scene wasn't amazing back then. We didn't really know too much, but we're like, let's just have a go. Let's just go to Melbourne. And obviously the culture and the food, there's, for us, it was like less takeaway and less McDonald's and Pizza Huts. It was all these little different, like you say, different cultures, European bakeries, Asian sort of barbecue houses and whole streets just full of Asian food, like in Richmond on Bridge Road. And so we just got engulfed in that food scene and where we worked. Well, I worked at Mecca, worked at Guy Grossi's, worked at a place called Interlude as well. And they're all hatted restaurants. So we just tried to I guess, take as much as we can, learn as much as we can, and just absorb it all. You know, it was the different foods you get down there compared to growing up in the suburbs of Brisbane, like, you know, blood orange, and you see fennel everywhere, and you use these sort of things, and these aren't things, you know, normal people in Brisbane in the suburbs would have had in their household, but that European, Italians and stuff like that just brought that and brought all those different flavours, and started to understand what food was about and how special it was, and had a really big meaning to us after working so long, and also living in Melbourne, which is, like, you know, a great cultural city, you know, like, things going on, there's food festivals, you know, summer, it just comes to life. So there's so much to do and see, and a lot of it's stemmed in the cultures from those different diversities, which was amazing for us.
Yeah, it is a different atmosphere, isn't it? I mean, I grew up in Bundaberg, my parents were Italian, but there wasn't that. But the first time I met Ben, who's still my mate today, a Sicilian mate, walking into an Italian deli in Lygon Street, and just being in there with all the salamis and and the cheeses, it's such a different experience to know that you're surrounded by that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, these days with shows like MasterChef and, you know, cooking, being a chef, being in the kitchen, is really, you know, it's one of those aspirational gigs.
Yeah.
Was it like that when you started out, or was it still not a lot of people wanted to do it back then?
I had a feeling it was definitely, I guess we call it, you know, among the chefs that same age as me that started, it's a bit more old school, and then there's probably a generation before us as well where it was more hardcore.
Yeah.
But it was something, wasn't about the money, it wasn't about, there was very few celebrity chefs, I guess, back then, the household names. So it wasn't about the fame, it was just about getting in there and sort of competing and really, like, putting everything in, like, your whole life was into cooking and how good you could become and how good you could get, you know what I mean? And each day was massive and these restaurants were pumping, but everyone had that same mentality of, like, go as hard as you can.
Was there a particular chef, person, or establishment that inspired you more than anyone else? Someone that really kind of lit the flame in terms of your creativity and your direction that you started to go down?
I think as my apprenticeship, like, I appreciated and learnt lots of things everywhere I went. You know, Grossi's was a great experience. Mecca was really good, different food, like Middle Eastern food, Cafe Clarenbold. And then when I went to Interlude with Robin Wilkins, who's still down in Victoria, that was a chef that I could really relate to, and the creativity and the stuff he was doing, the skill set was something I really admired and really absorbed myself in.
What was it that he was doing different?
He was like that fine dining edge, so it was pushing everything as far as he could, and the cleanness in the flavors, the stuff he was using, the simplicity but of the actual sort of flavors, but what he brought together, the different interesting flavors. I was less of a, not being of any sort of culture, I was just Aussie dinky dye. Italian was really nice to me, but it wasn't in my blood. So those new sort of flavors, those new combos, a bit experimental, was really really caught me out, like, as far as, like, really got my attention. And he, as a chef, was really calm, which was really calm. Unusual. Yeah, calm, yeah. It was really calm, and it was like...
Was that not your experience up until that point?
Not a lot. It's Italian, so there's a lot of, like, you know, energy, passion, and stuff, energy, which is really good. Yeah, you know, I like bringing that as well. I'm probably in between that, but when I went with Robin, it was this calmness, still intense, but really calm, and a small environment, which I really... really enjoyed. You know, everyone had their own sort of section. It was just you were responsible for it all, so it was really, I think I came of age as a chef there, it was really difficult, you know, really full on, but still I think that sort of molded me and what I took away from chefing, and sort of, I guess you picture yourself, what am I going to do going forward, was more along, I took a lot from that, and what food I really enjoyed, sort of that bit more experimental, new flavors. I was always trying to look for new stuff to create from that.
At Ricky's, tell me about when you started there, and did you get a chance to explore and kind of expand on your skills and those flavors that you're talking about?
Yeah, definitely. In between, so in Melbourne, I was with Gary Megan at the Boathouse, and he owned that. So it was good, a lot more casual though. So I was there for 6 years, and my sort of sous and head chef experience came from then. And then when I came to Noosa to move with my wife, who's originally from here, we had a kid. I went to Ricky's, but as a chef de partie, I wasn't in any senior role. And then I worked under Braden White, and it was really good. I learnt heaps and learnt probably more appreciation for the food in this area, and like seafood in particular. And that was still really good. The food was always really good there, really clean. The guests and, you know, the management, all, there's a high expectation there. So it was good to have that pressure, and that pressure to create new stuff with it in a new environment with new produce and new things. So my skill set definitely grew as I was there.
Yeah.
And you're forced to, like, the pressure's on, which was great. I really grew there and really cherished my time there because it was really good. I really learned as a head chef, and I learned also always learning cooking, always learning about food, always looking at different things, which is great. It kept that that energy and that momentum there. And then my skill set as a head chef there also was really tested and then put through its paces, but hopefully we did a good job, you know.
And how long were you there for?
I was there in total, I think, just under 7 years. Yeah,
wow, so that's,
I was
probably a long time.
Head chef for, I think, five and a half.
Yeah. Tell me about the last couple of years with COVID.
Yeah.
And everything that you know, and people have experienced COVID in their own way in terms of, you know, how it's impacted on their lifestyle and their jobs and their work. Would you say did you have much time off away from Ricky's with COVID?
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about the transition from there to this business.
Yeah, yeah, for
and
sure.
What really was the catalyst or the spark for that? What was your experience, so the last 2 to 2.5 years?
Yeah, so when COVID came, I think we probably had about 4 weeks completely off.
Yeah.
Completely off work. Obviously, when we were in lockdown, no one could do anything. As it started to loosen up, went back into work and went through that whole takeaway phase. But I think one thing I took out of that, and a lot of people in the industry took out of it, was you're so involved in work, you know, in the restaurant industry. It's so engulfing, like, takes up your whole life. As a head chef and sous chef as well, you know, it's 7 days, sort of, even if you're not there or you're not open 7 days, there's always stuff, you know, your phone's going on. There's always lots of cogs you've got to work out and fix problems. So to have that break, that mental break, was really refreshing, to be honest. Obviously, the world was going through a crazy thing, but to spend that time with the family, and just be connected mentally there, not tired or not, you know, have the phone going or there's a problem at work. That was a bit of an eye-opener for me. And a lot of other people in the industry as well, they just didn't know if they wanted to do it anymore because they had that sort of break. It sort of cut everyone off from it. And then going back was good. It was good to get back into it. It was different. It's been different since then. Obviously not in it now, but it was just different, you know, and Noosa got really busy and we eventually got back into normality, and it was going well. The business was going well. Staffing was an issue. There was still the same problems and still, you know, it's really, obviously really bad now from what I hear and the people I talk to, but that was always a struggle, and it just became a really big struggle when COVID came back, because I think the people that didn't want to do it anymore found something else, but then there's no one to replace them.
Yeah.
And there's no travel, so you don't have that that fluid workforce that was sort of coming and going.
Yeah.
Just disappeared, and I think over time it was just, you know, it remained busy, which was great for business and everything, but it wasn't great mentally because there was no sort of light at the end of the tunnel, like when's things going to get better or back to norm and stuff. So I think that was a big part of my transition and wanting to maybe step away from that. I didn't know what I wanted to do because I'd done it for so long and you're so sort of tunnel vision in that game.
It must be scary. I mean, I know I'm still doing radio, but often what you do as an occupation defines who you are.
Yeah.
So having that moment of, like, did you consider even stepping away from hospitality? Is that what you were saying? Or
yeah, I looked at it, but then I guess I felt like it's the only thing I felt I was good at and had a skill set at. So starting from scratch somewhere, there's nothing really that jumped out at me. I still love food, and I still, that experience, I sort of didn't want to waste it, didn't want to throw it away. Like, I don't regret anything about it, but I don't not where I want to be at the moment with my family and have that time, but what else could I do to provide? And I'm like, then the brain started thinking, I just need to get out.
Yeah.
And then I need to think about what I want to do. So that was sort of where I was at. And then the, what could I do with food was where I ended up.
Yeah.
And sort of where, how I ended up here now. Yeah.
Well, I'm hearing the same story from a lot of people in exactly the same position.
Yeah.
Who, I hate the word pivot, but, you know, I think it's a Chinese proverb or saying, from chaos comes opportunity.
Yeah.
And people started to, people like you started to, I guess, re-examine, as you just said, where they were and what they wanted to do. So the idea of Noosa Cartel, explain what you do and what this business is first up, and then we'll get into
it. So Noosa Cartel, we always, I guess, wanted to have our own business revolved around food. And basically, we sort of thought, what can we do in a kitchen? What do we think people in Noosa in particular, because that's where we live, that's our community, what do they want to eat? What can we provide using my skill set and my experience to them that we think we can do? And ready-made meals was something I thought of, and obviously using the local produce, the same techniques I use in the restaurants. I still like cooking like that. I don't want to cook shit. I don't want to cook, you know, slop. I still want to use that skill, that hard work that you put in. I want to use that in what I'm doing now. So to create still nourishing, as close as you can to restaurant quality meals that people can have in their home, you know. And that's a balance, I guess, of lifestyle for me and a balance of, you know, the product. And I think...
I'm not in your league when it comes to working in the kitchen or preparing a meal.
Yeah.
But I'm going to imagine, but I do love cooking.
Yeah.
I'm going to imagine that when you first set out on this journey, and I see all the ads for other pre-prepared, what do you call them? Like
ready-made
meals.
Yeah.
That there's a challenge in the freshness of preparing it in this kitchen and then getting it to the consumer.
Yeah.
Can you talk me through, am I right? Is there and overcoming that challenge and how you still get that meal to taste awesome at the other end?
Yeah, and I think that was a big challenge when we were looking at it starting was, can we do it fresh?
Yeah.
On a large enough scale? And probably not, starting off small. So we decided to freeze it, which also meant, which goes sort of with my, there's no waste. Everything's locked in there, frozen. It's not sitting on a shelf for 2 weeks, refrigerated. There's no preservatives. There's none of the nasties. So we thought we could do that. That's going to be a good selling point and a good business model for us. And also the challenge of, like how do you freeze food and then have it defrosted, or how do you get it heated up and still taste good?
Yeah.
So that was definitely a challenge. Certain things we can't.
So is there a trick? Like, what have you done differently? That's because we've tried them and they're outstanding.
Yeah.
How did you, like, obviously you tested a lot and you.
Yeah, there was a bit of testing. Some things don't work, like leafy greens don't work in anything.
No,
they go brown and reheating. And I wanted to make it super simple for people. So we wanted to be able to get the vac bag that we vac it in, the pouch, and have it just heated up in that and pour it into a bowl. And basically, you know, if you want to add a bit of fresh herb or garnish some crispies or whatever, you can do that. But that was the idea, to just make it super simple, you know, steam a bit of your microwave rice, you know, get from the supermarket, go with your curry, job's done, you know. So it was to get that. So we worked on the bag, vacuuming it so all that air is out of it, so it's not going to get freezer burn. It's not going to sort of dry out. And then heating it up in the bag so all the moisture and everything stays in. So it's about getting the consistency of the meals, the veg cooked right, all those individual elements cooked really well, putting it in the bag together, so when you reheat, it comes together.
Yeah.
So that was definitely took some testing and some challenging. Some things didn't work, you know. Noodles in soups are often hard. You need to just cook them just under, because when people reheat them, they start to cook again. So that was a little balancing point as well. There's lots of little things. So I think using, I guess, what I'd learned in restaurants with vacuuming and cooking in vac bags, which is obviously more of a trend these days and easier.
Is that your point of difference? Like when you talk about ready-made meals, no one else does it like this, like how you're doing it.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah, well that's...
Like where they're frozen in a vac...
So everything's sort of cooked, the sauces, and then chilled really quickly.
Yeah.
Blast chill us, everything's brought down as soon as possible. And then the protein and everything is weighed out and sauce and everything put in the bag, so it's together. And then as you reheat, it sort of finishes off any sort of cooking or that. And then,
yeah.
So that's the balance of getting all that right, the amount of everything in it. And point of difference wise, yeah, but obviously the quality and the fact that as much of the produce we use is locally sourced. So using local suppliers first and foremost, but also picking out a few of those outstanding, you know, suppliers we have in this region.
Can you talk to me about some of those?
So obviously there's a few, you know, generic classic Noosa red tomatoes. Yep. We've got Peter, classic one. We use even seconds of his. So we blend them up, put them in the sauces. We've got beef from Kilcoy. We use up the road, Noosa Meat Centre. They're smoked speck in the bourguignon.
Okay.
We've got mushrooms from
Tagalog. That goes near Bunnings, the meat centre?
Yeah, across. Yeah. We're using the mushrooms in the ramen from Tagalog Road mushroom produce, which is Scott. He's out there. And it's just about, I guess, for us, you know, local fish. When Noosa, you know, there's fish from Noosa, we use it.
You love prawns, right?
I love prawns. So we've got the Moolabar prawns in the Luxa. Anything we can get that's local, the Pomona honey in the lamb shoulder, anything we can get. I've just, even Taunton Market Garden had some beautiful jackfruit up there the other day, so I tried out like a rangdang with jackfruit, a vegan rangdang. It comes out tasty. So it's all about just using, I guess, the opportunities in the restaurant are a bit different to here, because here I can freeze it, so I can get something that's in a nice little abundance for me, that's local, use it, freeze it, and it's ready to go for, you know, our shelf life of 3 months. Where in a restaurant, you go through so much produce, it's really hard to consistently get, you know, certain producers to supply that amount for you unless they're bigger scale. So this opportunity has given us a bit of a scope to really get some smaller producers and start using their stuff and be able to grab a load at once and then utilize their product and really showcase them. So,
Can you run through some of the meals that you have on the menu?
Yeah, so we've got a beef bourguignon, so obviously with the local beef and local speck. We've got a braised lamb shoulder, so we use Pomona honey, so we've got some potatoes and carrots, and we slow cook that. Local fish curry, so we do a green curry with local fish. We've got a red lentil dal, which is really popular. So we put Noosa red tomatoes in that. The pork ramen. We do a bolognese sauce for two.
Oh, yeah.
And then we've just started... we got the prawn laksa, which is really good. Moolabar prawns, obviously. And then we just started like a Bali-style chicken, which is a mild chicken. So we use Elgin Valley, which is Glasshouse Mountains, a chicken with potatoes and cashews. It's really nice. And the same chicken we're using in the like a chicken cacciatore, which we've just started as well. So it's ever evolving. I think when we start, we're probably still new.
Yeah,
so we're just seeing what people like.
Yeah.
And then we've got another vegan. We're doing like sort of a vegan rangdang. I'm going to try and continually do, because that scope of, I guess there's a lot of demand for vegans that want a quality meal as well.
Yeah.
That maybe not the supermarket. You know, you see the stuff on the shelf for $8. It doesn't. I've never tried it, but it doesn't look appealing.
Yeah.
And there's always scope for maybe doing sauces. I've had some demand for the curry sauces as well, just the sauces. So, yeah, I know some young guys did theirs, so I think people still want something like that local. So there's a bit of scope for some other stuff, you know, making the sauces anyway. Do I bucket up the other things?
And what I love is, I mean, the path that you've chosen with what you're doing here is well, look, nobody knows what's going to happen in the future, but is it COVID proof? I mean, this is exactly, you know, if there's a lockdown, if people are restricted to their homes, this is the kind of thing where people can, you know, they have their ready-made meals
and
bring them home, pop them in a pot of boiling water. Tell me about the operation here. Is it just you, Josh?
Yeah, it's just me at the moment.
Well, the wife helped me set it
up a little bit, but she's obviously works as well. So while we're getting started, it's just me, which, is ideal. It gets a bit lonely.
Yeah.
I did like the banter of kitchens and stuff like that. But still, it's just me. So it makes it easier, I guess, for our, you know, our family life as well, because I can decide to, you know, if I need to come home early or whatever, you know, the operation still continues. I can come in whenever I need to. But yeah, just me. So, you know, from start to finish, it's just me running at the moment. Hopefully we get busy enough where, you know, we can get someone else in and start to sort of ramp it up, get really busy. But yeah.
And if you order your meals, you collect them from here? You don't deliver, do you? No.
No, no. I'm doing some wholesale now. We just got into a few grocers.
Oh, yeah.
So it's one Market Garden and Sunshine Beach General Store.
Oh, yes.
Good locations. And then the Provador up at Peter Covitas, the Alba. They're going to take some meals as well.
Oh, great.
So that's a thing we didn't look at the start. It wasn't sort of on our radar, but was more farmers markets I was looking at the start. And direct, but the farmers markets just didn't work out. We didn't have a space available, so we sort of went down this line. And yeah, direct. So Thursday and Friday we do pick up, just because it's me. Sometimes I might be out picking something up on those other days. So Thursday and Friday I'm here definitely 10:30 to 4:30.
Yeah.
And then you can order online or shoot an email or just pop in. Yeah.
There's always an adjustment going from, you're talking about the, you miss the social banter of working with other people. You know, at 30 years I've done radio where I walked into a studio. Now I do radio from home and there's nobody there but the cat.
Yeah.
And often in a creative industry, is there something that you miss in terms of feedback that you get from an audience or from customers who are sampling, you know, like in your restaurant or at a table near where you're working, as opposed to what you're doing now that you're missing? You know, is there that element or ingredient?
Yeah, it's a different aspect. I know restaurants is like immediate.
Well, you get
immediate feedback.
You're getting feedback
immediate
from your
feedback,
customers.
Which is most of the time good, you know, you hope so, but sometimes
but there's
not
an
great
energy too, isn't there?
Exactly. There's an urgency, and I guess the kitchen, you're bouncing off each other with ideas, feedback, new dishes, you know, you're tasting, you're asking other people's opinion. It's a real, like a team, a real, you know,
so
machine.
Is it hard to adjust to what you're doing? Because I'm thinking of my experience, it's hard to adjust to
a little bit
working solo.
A little bit. You get here towards the end of the day and you feel like you've been here all day and you've only been here 5 hours.
And you haven't had much feedback.
But you're like, what am I doing? I need, you know, someone to talk to. I need someone to, you know, have a joke at or you know, taste this. You just, you're second guessing.
Yeah, what do you
is
think
that
of
correct?
This?
You know, but you just got to go with it. There's no one here. So, yeah, it's taken a little bit to get used to. Sort of in a groove now, you know, and it's, it's different. I think I'm a person that likes company.
Yeah.
I'm not a person that does it.
But the upside, you've already answered, the upside to that is you have your time is flexible, you can head home when you want and be with the rest of the family. So, I mean, you know, the trade-off and the payoff is that.
There's a lot, and I probably get way more done when I'm by myself because when there's someone else, we tend to, you know, crap on and have a laugh and you get a bit distracted, so.
Noosa Cartel's Josh Smallwood was my guest today. Rate and review the podcast, say good things and give us a 5-star review. And if you like the episode, share it about on your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.